Hello. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. So excited to be with you right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. Dr. Z and I love to be part of the Progressive Radio Network family of shows. They have a lot of award-winning content, which you can check out at prn.fm. And our show is on every Tuesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But, you know, in today's world of radio and podcasts, which have sort of blended together as one entity, you can listen anytime you want, in any way you want. You can call in and listen live. You can call into our comment phone line and leave comments, which we can then answer. You can listen on any device that you have. You can download the shows. They are totally open access, downloadable. And you can find out more at prn.fm or at our website, naturalnurse.com, all one word, naturalnurse.com. And we love to have comments from you. You can also join our totally free mailing list by just going to naturalnurse.com, lower left-hand area. Just click on join the mailing list, and no questions are asked except your email. That's it. And then you get an email saying, do you really want to join? You know, because we don't put people on our mailing list who don't really want to join. It's not spam. And if you go yes, you will get our updates, our articles, which we send out regularly. Also, you can check naturalnurse.com calendar to find out about all our fantastic classes and workshops. Many of them are online. We're in the midst of having what's called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Course, and that grants 18 CEUs for nurses, nurse practitioners, midwives, registered dietitians, massage therapists, and acupuncturists. And if you're none of those, you can still totally take the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Course, and you will still get a certificate. That's a certificate of completion that you completed 18 credit hours of work in herbal medicine. What can you do with that? Well, you could use it towards developing what's called an RH. An RH is a registered herbalist certification with the American Herbalist Guild. And what that gives you is the ability to truly call yourself a registered herbalist. And by the way, the recognition of the registered herbalist certificate is increasing tremendously because many insurance companies will actually reimburse people when they have a health savings account for seeing an herbalist, but they have to show that it's a qualified herbalist. And one way to do that is if the person sees an RH, a registered herbalist. So it's becoming more and more well recognized, even within mainstream. So it's a fabulous thing. If you want to be an herbalist as your profession, the best way to do that is proceed to get your RH, which is your registered herbalist certificate. And one of the ways to do that is to take the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. That does not get you all the way to RH, but it gets you a coursework towards your RH. And if any of you want to talk about that individually, that's one of the big things I do, which is career counseling in natural medicine. How can you make your livelihood within the realms of natural and holistic? So that's one of the many things you can do. Now today, we want to bring on board our wonderful guest, Dr. Jolene Brighton. Dr. Brighton got her doctorate of naturopathic medicine at National University of Natural Medicine, and she graduated with a degree in nutritional biochemistry and clinical nutrition first at Cal Poly. There, she was involved in nutrition research, exploring interventions for maintaining healthy hormones and body composition as we age. She is currently the medical director at Rubus Health in Portland, Oregon. Her postdoctoral education and training in functional medicine and clinical nutrition is through the highly esteemed Institute for Functional Medicine, and she continues to study to stay up to date on the most innovative therapies and techniques to help patients heal. Her wonderful book is Healing Your Body Naturally After Childbirth, and that will be the focus of our discussion today. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Jolene Brighton. Is Jolene there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Now I can. Yay! Thanks for joining us, Dr. Jolene.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, you're quite welcome. And what we're going to be talking about today is really anything you'd like. We have the full hour until, you know, the top of the hour, so we can really go deeply into all of the topics. But first, I want to reach back in time. And why did you get involved in nutrition and then naturopathic medicine?
Well, you know, I was one of those lucky, unlucky kids who was pretty sick for a while. So I say lucky, unlucky because it was a struggle having a lot of gastrointestinal issues growing up. But at the same time, it really paved the way for my path that I'm on today. So I actually had H. pylori, which wasn't discovered for a decade. So I struggled with gastritis, heartburn, regurgitation, starting at a very young age. And it wasn't discovered by a doctor until I was about 17 years old. And so it was a decade struggle. And part of why it wasn't discovered is because the discovery of H. pylori hadn't made its way into the conventional paradigm. So for people who don't know, H. pylori is a bacterial infection that causes ulcers in your stomach. So, you know, at 17, I got treatment finally. Thank you for those interventions. However, I was left with the reality that my doctor was recommending I stay on a proton pump inhibitor for life. Now, this time, proton pump inhibitors were not over-the-counter. These are acid-suppressing drugs for people who are not familiar with these. They weren't over-the-counter like they are today, and they certainly weren't tested in someone as young as me. And when I asked my doctor about diet, he kind of brushed it off and just said, you know, good luck with that, but, you know, it's not going to help. You need the medication. And I started, you know, experimenting and recognizing that if I ate a lot of refined carbohydrates, if I, you know, drank orange juice and had spaghetti on, you know, the sugar, the carbohydrates, I got heartburn with the acid, and that if I shifted my diet, things improved. And as I started using food as medicine to heal my own body as a teenager, this is something that, you know, made me kind of wake up years later to, like, you know, this is something that is a powerful medicine and that you could pursue. So my very first degree was actually in chemistry. So I went back to school, studied chemistry, then went into clinical and nutritional biochemistry. And from there, as I was doing my research, it was, you know, I love doing research. I love exploring and answering these questions. But I realized that I could really have a lot more of an impact working with people one-on-one, and I had a knack for educating people. And so I thought I actually had a full-ride scholarship to get my PhD. I thought maybe I'll get an MD.
Wait a minute. That's a big deal. You actually were able to get a Fulbright scholarship.
Yeah,
not everybody gets that. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I had a scholarship. So it was Cal Poly and UC Davis had a they had an agreement, and so I could get my master's at Cal Poly and then go and get a PhD at UC Davis, which is a great program. I'm really grateful for that opportunity. But as I talked to more and more of the female colleagues that were, you know, they had their PhD or they were pursuing it, it really didn't feel as aligned. It was a big leap to walk away from, like, wow, I could have my education paid for, and instead I'm going to be a naturopathic doctor. And so I found naturopathic medicine, and after having such an extensive science background, it really felt like the missing piece, like the philosophy that respects the body's innate ability to heal. And, you know, so for me, I wanted to be able to partner this knowledge, study herbal medicine. I actually, it was really into herbal medicine as a kid and natural therapies. You'd leverage this food as medicine and bring the science into this modality and be able to work with people one-on-one. And now I actually work with people, you know, in a much bigger way. I'm a speaker, I'm an author, and I help educate people about what is possible for their body and also how to converse with their doctor so that they can get the best treatment and have the best relationship with their physician.
Yes, it is phenomenal. I really am very involved in naturopathic medicine because my business partner and co-host on this show, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, is a naturopath who graduated from Bastyr and is involved at the University of Bridgeport as an instructor and, in fact, one of the main founding members and a professor. And it's so amazing that from day one, students feel so fulfilled because it's not like with the Institute of Functional Medicine where first you're going through a lot of training in mainstream and you have to spend tons of time on things that you may not love. As a naturopathic physician, you are delving deeply into both all the traditional healing and the conventional knowledge.
And that's the big thing, I think, you know, when people say, like, well, you know, is a naturopathic doctor better than a medical doctor, better than an osteopath? It's like, we all have our different trainings and our different backgrounds, and we all bring something to the table, and it just depends on what you're looking for. And I agree 100% with, like, you know, I have a lot of friends who, you know, went the conventional route, then later studied functional medicine. And for them, you know, the way I describe it is that it's like you rooted down into a philosophy, that allopathic philosophy, and now you have to dig up those roots and root them down in a different way of thinking. Because when you're looking at root cause medicine, it's not just that we use herbs or that we use food or, and it's not what we use as much as it's the way that we approach the case and the way that we think about it. You know, we have access, and I'm grateful to have access to all of these tools. I mean, there is a time and a place for, you know, pharmaceuticals to be used. However, we have to have the wisdom and the discernment to understand when is that, when do we use that, and always ask the question, am I treating the symptoms or am I treating the root cause? And so I think it's an important distinction, and for people to understand that, like, I would never advocate that we don't have emergency medical physicians. I think they are excellent. We just have to look at what is the training, what is the modality, what is the philosophy, and how does that serve you with what your concerns are in this moment.
That is so true, and I really feel like a naturopath is the most highly trained physician. I would say the only challenge is that there really are only a few licensed naturopathic universities, and then there are online schools that seem to grant a naturopathic degree even though they are not licensed, and they certainly don't get the level of training like someone like yourself would have.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big issue. That's been a big issue in politics in terms of consumer protection with that, because there are, and you're right, there's these online universities. Several states have actually deemed those degrees illegal because they are, you know, they're borderline public endangerment. When somebody comes out and calls themselves a naturopathic doctor, yet they're not a licensed clinician, they don't have a board overseeing them, they don't have CMEs they have to follow up with, it's a little bit tricky for the consumer to understand, so the general public to understand who is a doctor and, you know, who, you know, that can actually practice medicine and who is not. And it's really unfair that the burden of that and investigating that falls on the patient to understand that. And, you know, I've met some of these people who've gone through these online trainings and they're not actually practicing medicine. That's not the role that they've gotten into. And their understanding around it was like, oh, I was going to have a doctorate in this education. But no, I wasn't licensed to practice medicine. I can't practice medicine. But it's a very interesting situation, I think, that to find yourself in as a patient, to be looking for a naturopathic doctor. And in some states, people can call themselves a naturopath. You can't call yourself a doctor unless you're actually a doctor. And there's a lot of states laws around who can, you know, introduce themselves as a doctor, because doctor implies, in the United States at least, it implies physician. And whereas, you know, in other countries, they will call you a physician. And even in some states, you know, in Oregon, we are naturopathic physicians here. In California, we are naturopathic medical doctors. Like in Arizona, it's naturopathic medical doctors. So there's a lot of terminology, and we really need to find a common place that makes it a lot easier on the patient. Because again, the burden shouldn't fall on them. And that's, you know, that's where there's a lot of people lobbying for state legislation because this is really where it does fall into the lap of politicians to do right by the patient and to make sure that there's that distinction in every single state so that a patient knows if someone calls themselves a naturopathic doctor, that is because they have a license, they have a governing body, they do their continuing medical education, they carry malpractice and everything that goes along with being a doctor.
This is so true, and that's very good. Thank you for that public education, Dr. Jolene Brighton. Now, within the realm of naturopathic medicine, many naturopaths do focus on one particular issue and become really an expert in that area, although, of course, if you are involved with the Institute for Functional Medicine, you're really keeping up on the latest information on various testing techniques that can really narrow what's going on with a particular individual that really mainstream physicians don't seem to have access to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is, I think, a really important distinction is that I also sometimes have patients who are really frustrated with their doctor because their doctor won't run a lab test. And the thing I explain is that, you know, that's good that your doctor didn't run it because what your doctor was saying to you is I'm not trained in this test, I don't know how to interpret it, and it won't change the outcomes. And so we don't order tests that we don't understand how to interpret or won't actually change our treatment plan. And so that doesn't make your doctor a bad person, it just means you need a doctor who is trained in these things. And this is something that, you know, I do a little bit differently in terms of being a naturopathic doctor is that, you know, this is what I love about studying with IFM is I'm a very data-driven individual. And of course, I mean, I come from a research background. I want to have a hypothesis and test and know that I'm correct in what I'm doing and really that I'm serving the patient best. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And for me, I really love to leverage lab testing. And it's true. You know, there's naturopathic doctors who are very much focused in primary care. So there's many of my colleagues who are primary care physicians. And primary care is, you know, it's a triage in a way of like, you know, we can help you with your day-to-day stuff. And, but, you know, there might be a time and a place to refer you. So let's say, you know, you develop diabetes. Then you need insulin, let's get you over to the endocrinologist. Or, you know, we need to get, you know, more testing for your gut, let's get you to the gastroenterologist. And then there are naturopathic doctors who are very specified in what they do. So, you know, there's doctors who specialize in chronic diseases and, you know, autoimmunity. Doctors who are really focused in chronic infections. Doctors who do what I do, which is, you know, female endocrinology. So we are looking at women's hormones. And with that, you know, there's actually an entire endocrinology branch of naturopathic medicine. And we'll see in 2019 the first board certification for this, which I think is really exciting. And so, you know, that's the exciting part about naturopathic medicine is because we go in, we're taught so many different modalities and so many different, you know, ways to approach the body, you can really hone in. But, you know, the thing I'll say is that because the way we're trained, we all have the commonality of, like, we're all going to look at the gut. We're all going to question what's going on in the gut. We're all going to look at what is normal function and how do we optimize physiology. We still have that philosophy, but, you know, depending on what our focus is, we may be referring you to somebody who has a cardiology focus so that you can make sure that you're getting the best treatment with that. Like, you know, when it comes to cardiovascular issues, that's not my wheelhouse. And that's, you know, I think a very important part about being a physician in the modern age is recognizing where your limitations are and being sure to refer so that you get that patient to the right person who can serve them best.
Yes. And so if just if anybody thinks it's haphazard, speaking to you, Dr. Brighton, really points out that this is evidence-based medicine, and I will say it is prudent evidence-based medicine of the highest order, because you are looking at not only the therapeutic treatments that might be drug-based, and then you're evaluating which is best for this particular individual based on the following factors: lab tests, evidence-based, lowest adverse effect profile with best outcome, and we can throw in cost-effectiveness because really natural remedies are more cost-effective.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to your point about IFM, so I'll actually be at, so if people aren't familiar, this is the Institute of Functional Medicine. I'll be at their annual conference this year, which is on stress, pain, and addiction. And as we know, you know, statistically speaking, 91 Americans are dying of opiate overdose, and that's happening every single day. And the way that we've been managing pain has really, it's been a disservice in a lot of ways. But what we know even further from that, you know, as we investigate the pain paradigm, is that women in particular are less likely to receive adequate treatment when it comes to their pain. And they're, it's more likely that they'll be dismissed or be told that symptoms are in their head. So, you know, as we know this epidemic is going on and we know that there's this medical gender bias with pain, I'm really excited to be attending this conference. I'm not a pain specialist. But it's certainly, I mean, it's going to present all of the latest research on this so that when I do have a patient, I know how to refer them properly. And in addition, taking a look at the other lifestyle and dietary factors that contribute to pain and can contribute to addiction as well, so that we can understand how to help these people. Because there's a, you know, there's an opioid crisis right now. And we're seeing a lot of people addicted to these drugs, and it's not necessarily their fault. Like, this has been the only thing that they've been provided. And depending as well on their genetics, their upbringing, you know, all of these variables, they may be predisposed to be addicted to these highly addicted, addictive pharmaceuticals. And so this is something that I'm really excited about. And that's why I always love IFM's annual conference. The amount of research studies that you walk away with, and that you know, I end up going home until many, many weekends reading through these papers and investigating further what was presented. They do an excellent job there.
They certainly do. And I was involved with the beginning of that organization because I've been doing holistic medicine since 1964. And I was the head nurse at the Corsello Centers for Complementary Medicine in Manhattan with Dr. Serafina Corsello, medical doctor, who unfortunately is now on the other side. But she actually partnered with Jeffrey Bland, who was the person who initiated the entire functional medicine movement. And that was his organization. He has since moved on to other projects, but that's how long I've been involved with that society. And it has always been so excellent in terms of research and evidence base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a situation where, like, you know, it is really, I think, exciting to see how much research is coming about. So, you know, when I was back in naturopathic medical school, we were, you know, being taught about the microbiome. It's very different. So when I was in getting my nutrition degree, the story went that the microbiome was just a bunch of freeloaders. Like, they just ate your food and they gave you a little bit of B12 and vitamin K. You've been in medicine way longer than me, so I'm sure you saw the evolution of these things where it was like, you know, if women got a yeast infection or they were on antibiotics, you know, so this is way back in the day, you know, my mom would be telling me, take probiotics. Like, we'd be at the health food store, take probiotics, eat yogurt with, you know, eat a fermented yogurt, eat these things that you don't get a yeast infection. And yet, in the conventional paradigm, so allopathic medicine, they were like, that's crazy talk. Why are you talking about giving probiotics? There's no evidence for this. And now, to see where we've arrived, so I get into naturopathic medical school, we're talking about how we need to use probiotics, you know, how important the gut is. And this was so controversial, really, at the time. And now we've seen the explosion of research. And now everybody's like, oh, yeah, let's jump on board with this, because now we've got evidence. And this is how things really evolve. But it's very interesting to me to think about how much I was taught, you know, even in my nutrition undergrad and in naturopathic school, that is now being validated by science. It's very, very exciting. And there are people who are like, well, we've been saying this for years. We didn't need science to prove this. I think Chinese medicine feels that way a lot, because they've got like thousands of years under their belt. And they're like, okay, we've been saying this for how long? And now, like, one study comes out and you finally believe us. And it's like, well, we need the research. Like, it's very important to have the research so that we can have a better understanding. And that, I think that there's a lot of things that have been said for a very long time in many of these natural modalities. Well, really, I mean, these medical modalities that have pre-existed, you know, what is now allopathic medicine and the standard of care in the United States, I think there's a lot of truth in what's been said, and it's very exciting to me to now see the science picking up around it and there being validation around these things. And, you know, as I say this, this is not to say there was never a medical doctor out there, you know, saying use probiotics. There certainly was. There certainly were many. I mean, I remember seeing nurse practitioners who were like, eat yogurt if you're taking antibiotics. And so, and I will say, I feel like nurses, I just had someone message me today and they were saying how they were talking to their nurse about their hormones and it was such a great conversation compared to what they were having with their gynecologist. And like, you know, something I see is that, you know, nurses, they tend to be in that place where they are open to, you know, hearing what is possible in terms of helping their patient. Because at the end of the day, what they care most about is really helping that patient. And that's not to say that's not what doctors are up to, but doctors also have this extra layer of like, I don't get as much time with my patients and
yeah, 8 minutes,
I have this
right.
standard of care to follow.
Dr. Jolene, I have to tell you, we have to take a little break right here. You have so much information to share. And when we come back, let's focus on your new book, Beyond the Pill, a 30-day plan to support women on birth control. So you have so much information to share, and thank you so much for being our guest today. Listeners, I'd like you to know that you are listening to Dr. Jolene Brighton, and we will be right back with more. You can find her at drbrighton.com. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest. We'll be right back.
once again, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And our guest today is the wonderful and knowledgeable naturopathic doctor, Jolene Brighton. You can find her at drbrighton.com. We've been talking about her background and, in general, loads of information about naturopathic medicine. But let's hone in on your newest book, Dr. Brighton, which is called Beyond the Pill, a 30-day plan to support women on birth control, help them transition off, and eliminate symptoms of post-birth control syndrome. What is all that about?
Yeah, so all of that is about what we were never told about hormonal birth control. And I think it's very important for everyone to understand this book is not anti-birth control by any means. In fact, what it really aims to do is give the information that women need to be able to make the best decision for themselves. And, you know, whether that's to use hormonal birth control or to treat their symptoms naturally. And so, with this book, why it's called Beyond the Pill is because I'm giving root cause solutions and symptom management naturally to the most common hormonal issues women face and are often prescribed hormonal birth control for. So things like acne, heavy periods, irregular periods, PCOS, endometriosis, and I talk about the research as it, you know, shows the connection and correlation between depression, anxiety, loss of libido, and how it affects our gut and our nervous system and really every single system in our body. So that's Beyond the Pill in a nutshell.
And what made you choose this topic to write a book on?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I actually, when I went into my private practice after doing 2 years in a homeless youth clinic where I prescribed a lot of birth control, I said to my husband, you know, I don't want to prescribe birth control anymore. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm fatigued. And he reminded me of that. He's like, you said that, and then you wrote a whole book on it. And really, it was my patients. My patients taught me so much. When I had come off birth control myself, I developed what is now called post-birth control syndrome, which is a collection of signs and symptoms that come on, you know, on average 4 to 6 months after stopping birth control, but it certainly can be sooner or later. And when I developed that, I thought I was the only one. My doctor was like, yeah, no, this is just you. This is your body. And yet, you know, I was able to leverage, you know, what I was learning in naturopathy school, food is medicine for sure, and be able to reverse my symptoms. And once I got into private practice, I came to be known as the doctor who believed women's birth control stories. So women would call me up and they would want to schedule appointments saying, I hear you're the doctor that believes women's birth control stories. I thought this was super odd until I got into the room with them one-on-one and had conversations and realized that, you know, a lot of women face side effects with birth control that they're not taught about and it's not explained to them. And when they go back to their doctor, they're sometimes met with like, this is just your new normal, or here's another pharmaceutical for those symptoms. And as they come off, you know, almost all women struggle in some way to break up with birth control. And there's some work that needs to be done before you come off of birth control so that you can avoid having, you know, new onset or the return of acne. You can avoid having gut issues, neurological issues, and of course, any kind of period problems.
So there's so many reasons. Let me ask you this. If somebody was using birth control pills for birth control, mm-hmm. what other options are there for birth control?
Oh, yeah.
They decide to go off the pill.
Yeah, well, chapter 13 of my book is dedicated to non-hormonal birth control options, and I take women through the pros and cons because there is no one-size-fits-all for everybody. You really have to evaluate what is best for you. Now, the interesting thing is that we understand that 58% of women are using hormonal birth control primarily for symptom management, not for pregnancy prevention. So this has been a big shift in the recent decades for women's primary use of birth control. So, you know, we have to evaluate those things of like, well, what are your symptoms? What's causing those symptoms? Because, you know, even though like as a doctor, you're like, well, acne is a benign thing to have, you know, from a mental emotional state, it's a pretty significant thing for a woman to have in her life. And so we want to be looking at those things. And if you choose to use hormonal birth control for contraceptive reasons only, you should know about the risks that come with it. like nutrient depletions, messing with your microbiome. And if you want to come off of it, you should certainly have a backup method so that you don't get pregnant. That's step one. And for some women, that might be a copper IUD. It might be barrier methods. They might choose to go the fertility awareness method route, which, you know, for people who are listening, this is not the rhythm method. This is based in science of recording your body temperature, specifically basal body temperature, and making sure that you're checking your symptoms as well to predict your fertility. And in 2018, we actually saw that the FDA approved the first femtech device known as Natural Cycles to be a fertility awareness contraceptive device. And so we have a lot of options when it comes to non-hormonal birth control. I gave an entire chapter of that in my book, but you also have to view it through the lens of, like, what is realistic for you? And if pregnancy prevention is number one, you need to go through and look at the pros and cons of each method. No method is 100% effective. And, you know, I certainly didn't know this until I landed in the emergency room with a ruptured ovarian cyst that, you know, the pill is only 91% effective with typical use. And I have to say that, like, it was a nurse who taught me that, because I went into the ER and they're like, well, we have to make sure you're not pregnant. And I'm like, well, of course I'm not pregnant. I'm on the pill. And she just kind of chuckled and she's like, well, that's not 100% effective. And, you know, I, from reading the pamphlet insert, I was like, well, it's 99% effective. And she's like, no, just no. She's like, this could be an ectopic pregnancy. It's not that effective. And then when I looked into it, I'm like, oh, well, sure enough, the typical way that the pill is used is only 91% effective. That means 9 out of 100 women will get pregnant on it, which is very important to know, because, you know, hormonal birth control is going to deplete B12 and folate, which are two crucial nutrients if you become pregnant. By the time you take a positive pregnancy test, you already needed that folate and B12 for baby. And so if you are, this is why we advise women, if you're on the pill or any form of hormonal birth control, you should be taking a prenatal or a multivitamin to replenish those nutrient stores and to protect a potential pregnancy.
I so totally agree, Dr. Jolene, because one of the things I lecture about constantly is herb-drug interactions and drug-nutrient depletions. And I think that should be a major topic in medical school. And I think that the things that the drugs are known to deplete, like you're talking about with birth control, so often mirror the adverse effects symptoms, like so many women when they start birth control pills get depressed, which can be linked to B vitamin deficiencies, and then they're given an antidepressant instead of just given B vitamins.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we actually see specifically, so we're not in a place in the science to be able to say causation with hormonal birth control and depression, but we certainly have enough evidence. There's enough anecdotal evidence of women telling their stories. I mean, thousands upon thousands of women have experienced adverse mood symptoms when starting hormonal birth control. But we have some research that does show that the tryptophan pathway, so for people listening, tryptophan is the amino acid for which you synthesize serotonin and melatonin from. And there's research showing that that tryptophan pathway is actually disrupted while you're on hormonal birth control. So we can have issues with serotonin production. And like you were saying, like, we're missing B6. That's getting depleted. That we need that to make neurotransmitters. But in addition, that tryptophan pathway can actually go into quinolinic acid, which is a neurotoxin. So while you're on hormonal birth control, you may not make sufficient serotonin. You may have inflammation. It's highly probable that you have inflammation in your brain, which lends itself to the cytokine theory of depression. And instead of making yummy, neuro-loving molecules, you make ones that actually kill brain cells. And so this is something where research is starting to really investigate. Is this the potential mechanism of action by which hormonal birth control could cause depression? And so that's what we're, you know, seeing research really starting to focus on, to try to answer that question. So that
even without the answer, Dr. Jolene, what is the adverse effect of recommending co-committently, along with the use of birth control pills, B vitamin supplementation?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the thing, is that there, if you are on a, so if any other pharmaceutical, so let's take statins. We know it depletes CoQ10. Your doctor would say take CoQ10. If you were on metformin, it depletes B12. Your doctor would say take a sublingual B12. We know you can't out-diet the depletions caused by medication. You should definitely have a solid diet, but you're going to need a supplement on top of that. And so this is something whenever I'm speaking to clinicians that I really frame for them. Like, if you would do this with these drugs, why is it hormonal birth control is treated like it's, you know, like it's candy and not treated like the medication it is? You would give a multivitamin or prenatal because it's B vitamins, it's selenium, zinc, magnesium, CoQ10, antioxidants like vitamin A, vitamin C. Like, these are all essential for just about everything you do in your body. And yet we're placing women on this medication sometimes for decades on end without any discussion of this. So you're 100% right. There is no harm in giving a multivitamin, a prenatal, a B complex, and making sure you have your diet dialed in. And in fact, I think it can mitigate a lot of the side effects that women have with hormonal birth control. So if you do feel like that's your only option, I teach you in Beyond the Pill how to stay safe while you're on it, what labs your doctor should monitor, and when it's time to see your doctor and talk to them about what's going on.
Absolutely. And it's so great that you have all this in your book. And your book is, you know, because you are so well educated and you speak on a very high level with evidence-based discussion. But I feel like your book is something that really any woman could read.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was designed, as I went through it, I'm like, okay, when you get your period, what do you need to know about your hormones? So I teach you all about your hormones, all about your menstrual cycle, how those work. You know, when you are becoming sexually active, what do you need to know about these things? If you have a diagnosis of PCOS, you have blood sugar dysregulation, you're struggling with your libido or your mood, or maybe you're having, you know, skin symptoms, to understand what those symptoms mean and what to do about it. And there's a quiz in there that every woman can take that really dials you into what's your hormone imbalance. And then they give you the diet, lifestyle, and supplement interventions that can really help work with your body to be able to undo those imbalances so that you can feel optimized.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Folks, my name is Jordan Valerie. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm here to tell you about the Millennial Politics Podcast. We speak with the next generation of progressive candidates, activists, and organizations dedicated to restoring our democracy and protecting our civil rights and liberties. Make sure to stay tuned for Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, to hear the most recent episode of our podcast and follow us on social media and iTunes to stay up to date with everything millennial politics.
Join the game. I'm Celia Farber.
And I'm Christina Borgeson. We're the hosts of a brand new show, The Whistleblower Newsroom, right here on PRN. This is a show for and about whistleblowers. And by us, two investigative reporters brutally hammered for uncovering cover-ups and media corruption.
This show is for whistleblowers
who stand up for the truth and face devastating consequences, who document facts and risk their lives and livelihoods to bring those facts to the public.
They come from all walks of life, government, science, journalism, academia, and many other fields. They'll be safe, warm, and welcome here on the Whistleblower Newsroom every Friday morning, 10 a.m., right here on PRN.
And we're back again right here. We had a little bit of technical difficulty, but we're back. Hopefully our wonderful guest, Dr. Brighton, can hear me. Thank you for joining us today. And yep, you're here. And she's at drbrighton.com. She has wonderful books such as Healing Your Body Naturally After Childbirth and Beyond the Pill, a 30-day plan to support women on birth control, which we are in the midst of discussing. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brighton. So let's continue our discussion about, you know, people considering perhaps other options. Like you're saying, they may be on the pill for other things. And how does the birth control pill affect a woman's thyroid? Because so many people discuss weight gain and other problems that are associated with thyroid imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is an area that was really eye-opening to me as I got into the research and really went through and documented all the ways that hormonal birth control impacts the thyroid. I saw this time and again with my patients that the majority of my hypothyroid patients had a history of hormonal birth control. So we've talked a little bit about nutrient depletion. So, you know, things like zinc, selenium, vitamin A, these are all necessary for thyroid hormone production, conversion, and utilization. So for people who aren't familiar, TSH, that's what your brain says to your thyroid. Your thyroid is a butterfly-shaped gland that sits at the front of your neck and secretes T4, a little bit of T3. T4 is inactive, and it's up to your gut, your liver, and other organs to activate that into T3, and then we have to use it at the cellular level. So with the nutrient depletions alone, that entire process can be inhibited. But also hormonal birth control impacts your gut and your liver and can compromise their health to where you don't make that conversion as efficiently. And in addition to that, being inflammatory, anytime that we're inflamed, if you're taking a medication like birth control, which elevates inflammatory markers in the body, we can see that you don't actually get your hormones on the receptors. So the most common one that people are familiar with is insulin resistance. And you can have thyroid resistance as well, where you have issues actually getting thyroid hormone into the cell itself. In addition to that, you need your natural progesterone. So your natural progesterone actually supports your ability to utilize your thyroid hormone. And so when you're on hormonal birth control, you don't have progesterone. You have synthetic progestin, which is made in a lab, and it doesn't have those same benefits for you. So that's just kind of like high level overview of how it can impact your thyroid. But you're right. This can be the reason why women get on the pill and then they have unexplained weight gain or inability to lose weight, or they notice now they're fatigued, their hair is falling out, their skin is dry. And there's an entire chapter in Beyond the Pill about thyroid health and investigating this, so that you can understand, you know, how is birth control impacting your thyroid specifically?
Yes, that's so true. And very often this doesn't seem to be addressed in mainstream medicine. I mean, is it that doctors don't know or they don't have the time to go into it? I mean, why is mainstream medicine so behind the scientific evidence-based decision?
Well, I think a lot is it comes down to what they're taught in their medical curriculum. I mean, there's a lot to learn as a doctor, but they're still very much taught that the only test you run is a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, which is a brain hormone. It's how your brain talks to your thyroid. So it's an indirect marker of thyroid function. In addition to that, you know, we're taught as doctors that hormonal birth control is a wonderful tool. It helps the women's movement, and not taught so much about all of these different ways it interacts with your body. So one thing I didn't mention is that it raises thyroid binding globulin, which is a protein that grabs onto your free thyroid hormone while you're on it. And we know that in the research studies, when they're doing clinical trials, this is something they test for, along with sex hormone binding globulin, to make sure a woman is actually taking the medication in the trial.
It's so true. I find it literally shocking, Dr. Brighton, that women will come to discuss their case with me because I do, let's say, education in terms of what you can use naturally. And they'll say their doctor said that their thyroid is fine and the only test that is on there is the TSH, which, as you just elucidated, is not the thyroid hormone. So how can you determine that your thyroid is fine just by having a normal TSH? That seems medically imprudent.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Like, you wouldn't just test an FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, which is a brain hormone, and not test the corresponding, ovarian hormones. Or you wouldn't test an ACTH, which measures the brain signaling to the adrenal glands, and not also test cortisol and see, well, how does the gland respond? And that's what we want to do with thyroid as well, is that we want to see how is the brain talking to the thyroid, but also how does the thyroid respond? That's the T4. Then we want to see, how does your body convert that to the active form, which is T3, and specifically free T3 and free T4 are what you can actually use. Otherwise, it's bound up. And with free T3, I mean, that's your mood, your metabolism, your menses, why you grow hair, why you stay warm. And so that's a very important test to be running. And in addition, every woman should have her TPO and thyroglobulin antibodies checked, because the number one cause of hypothyroidism in the United States, for which women are 5 to 8 times more likely to develop, is Hashimoto's, is an autoimmune condition. And you can see these antibodies show up years before women start having symptoms, which is the ideal. If you see that there's antibodies, then you know what's coming down the pipeline. You can start intervening right away so that she doesn't go on to have tissue destruction and develop hypothyroidism.
So there's so much that doctors can do and that women can do. And, you know, I really think doctors, and in this particular case, I would imagine you would focus on gynecology because, you know, in conventional medicine, everything is so segmented that, you know, the conventional medical primary care doesn't really even address these things. If there's any hormone imbalance or female issues, they're going to send you to the gynecologist. So I'm hoping that gynecologists would do, you know, much more in-depth testing and start to have the level of understanding of evidence-based dysregulation that you are sharing. But what are some of the things, because we're getting, believe it or not, to the end of our show pretty close, what are some of the things besides getting a copy of your book, Beyond the Pill, A 30-Day Plan to Support Women on Birth Control, what are some of the things that people can do to help themselves have lower symptoms and feel better?
Well, one that we talked about was definitely getting on a prenatal or multivitamin and replenishing your nutrient stores. But as I said, you also need to make sure that you are setting a firm foundation with your diet. So you want to eat an anti-inflammatory, blood sugar regulating diet. So what does that mean? We want to avoid processed foods. We want to eat fat and protein with every meal and as many vegetables as you can include. Aiming for 6 to 9 servings of vegetables a day is really ideal. And getting variety. So some be cruciferous vegetables, bringing in onions, bringing in leafy greens, and just really making sure that you're eating that nutrient-dense diet. Not only will that serve to replenish nutrient stores, It will aid your liver in doing what it does best, which is detoxifying. Well, actually, your liver does a whole lot more than that, but it will help with detoxification. It also feeds your microbiome, so those good gut bugs, help with gut motility. Liver and gut health are crucial to hormonal health, and if they're not on point, we're going to struggle with symptoms as well. And then, of course, looking at your lifestyle. You know, the reality is that the stuff that it takes to heal your body and maintain your health, it doesn't happen in a doctor's office. It's really, what do you put at the end of your fork? How do you talk to yourself? Do you have stress reduction practices? Are you getting in bed at a reasonable hour at night and staying there and getting into that deep sleep so that your body and your brain can repair itself? And so this stuff isn't super sexy. I know that, you guys, but it is the stuff that keeps you out of the doctor's office.
But you know what? I'll tell you what. Dr. Brighton, do you live according to those doctrines? Because I do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't find it difficult at all. I find it just regular life, especially nowadays. There's so much available in terms of organic foods, in terms of, you know, you can watch recipes online, on YouTube. There is really no reason to not have a healthy lifestyle other than if it's not your choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
And sometimes the first thing I think that patients have to do is, like, buy a pot. I'm not kidding. So many people, especially in the age group you're talking about, like 30s, 40s, who would be on birth control more than, like, my age group, more like towards 70. So that those younger people, a lot of them they don't own a pot. I'm not kidding. They only either eat out on the run or frozen things from the freezer, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that's like, I do want to just say, like, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, we are designed to seek out the most calorically dense food that's as easy as to get as possible. So people, you know, when you're doing that, you're following your biology. It just so happens that in this day and age, calorically dense doesn't mean nutrient dense, which is what it used to mean once upon a time. And so it can be a little bit of a struggle, but it is totally doable to shift the diet into a nutrient dense diet. And you're right, one of the places it starts is making your own food at home.
And you don't have to do it every day, because as you know, people's life, especially the age group you're talking about, who might be on birth control pills, a lot of them are really busy between being a young mother and having a family and having a full-time job. I mean, this has not been the norm in human existence either, but you just have to carve out what I find is 2 hours a week. I actually think that's doable, where I cut up all my salad, I make a big pot of organic vegetable soup, and put some meat in it if somebody likes, and then freeze individual portions, have grab-and-go bags available in the refrigerator to take with you. And it's amazing how quick that turnaround time is to where you start feeling better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true, so true.
So I want to thank you so much for all your wonderful input. Tell us how people can best find you, Dr. Brighton.
Yeah, so you can find me at drbrighton.com. That's drbrighten.com. I also have a YouTube channel where I put out weekly videos for people to learn. I know we all learn differently. And then you can find me on Instagram at Dr. Jolene Brighton. And certainly, if you grab Beyond the Pill, please grab my gratitude gifts, which are at beyondthepillbook.com. We've got over $250 worth of goodies there for you. Any version you buy anywhere in the world, we'll send you recipes, we'll send you some exclusive interviews and all kinds of stuff to help you on your healing journey.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.